creative souls, and welcome back to Think Outside the Blue Box podcast. I'm Anthony Rivera. I'm the lead videographer and editor here at Blue Box Digital, and today I am joined by Mr. Randy Ojeda Esquire.
Yeah.
How are you, man?
It's good to hear it with the Esquire.
Yeah, the Esquire. You're not used to hearing that.
No, yeah, you know, people don't use it as much as they used to. You know, it makes me feel like an old town lawman or something. You know,
the guy with the white hair. And
yeah, suit, exactly. Know? Yeah, that's me.
That's awesome, man. Well, yeah. Tell us a little bit about what you do in the area here. You're from Tampa, right?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Tampa. I went to law school in Chicago, but then I came back.
Nice. So you're originally from Chicago?
No, originally from Tampa.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, born and raised. So why'd you go up there?
It was one of the better schools I got into, really? And you know, I had a scholarship and stuff, and I had family in Chicago at the time, so.
That's
you know,
perfect.
Yeah, and Chicago's always been like my second city, so you know, it was nice to go there and live there for a little while.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. So you got your law degree, you know, you're certified, and what kind of law do you practice?
Music law, you know, it says entertainment law on my website, but really the only entertainment I do is music, you know?
Really?
So I'm 100% a music lawyer. You know, I don't do traffic accidents during the day and then moonlight as a music lawyer. It's like, I do music all the time. 100% of my clients are musicians, labels, you know, management companies, publishing companies.
Wow. So you do a lot of copyright stuff, a lot of...
Yeah, a lot of copyrights, trademarks, you know, a lot of just deals, you know, producer deals, artist deals, you know, label deals, just making agreements happen, you know. That's one of the things I really like about it, because, you know, I like the fairness aspect of it. You know, you're not like, you know, in a lot of law... you're adversarial, you're like going up against somebody and you're trying to win. But like with contracts, it's about fairness, you know, it's about everybody getting what they expected and everybody kind of working together to make the deal happen, you know? So I like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a little bit more collaborative than most law, you know?
Have you had to litigate anything?
No, thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I haven't had to do any litigation. I haven't had to never step foot in a courtroom, you know?
Gotcha.
Just, you know, boardrooms, not courtrooms, you know.
Nice.
I like that.
So what kind of clients do you take on?
Anybody, you know. I do all genres of music. So I do a lot of hip hop, a lot of rock music, EDM. You know, I'm working with this country artist now, you know, so it's just like all over the place, you know. Everything.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
What made you go into that? Just curious.
No, I was a musician myself, so I started you know, I play bass and I played in bands in high school and college and before law school. So I've always, you know, obviously been into music. And then when I was in law school, I actually started managing a rap artist, and, you know, as one does. And you just go to law school and manage rappers, you know. So I got into artist management. I felt like it was a good skill set for me. And then, you know, I did A&R at Symphonic Distribution for a little while. I managed other artists and, you know, started my own management company, did that for a while too. And then during the pandemic was actually when I made the switch to do music law full time, you know, because I had had my law degree and I just never really did anything with it. You know, I was doing management. So, you know, the pandemic happened.
You were more on the management side.
I was, side. Yeah. Okay. I was just doing management for a while. And then, I realized if I was ever going to make the transition, you know, if I was ever going to switch, the pandemic was a good time to do it, because I wasn't doing anything else, you know. So I took the bar here in Florida and then started my law firm pretty much right off the bat, and I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Who was your first client?
I don't even remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't know. I should have put the dollar up on the wall the or whatever, dollar, you know. Yeah, the first dollar, but no, I didn't. I was at the time, I was just like, I just need clients, so I'll take, you know, whoever I can, you know. But there's been a lot of people from the area that I've been fortunate enough to work with. Gats was an early client.
Okay.
You know, Pusha Preem, I've done some work with him. Nice. You know, a lot of people from the area, you know.
Just Tampa?
No, not like just Tampa. Like something. Actually, most of my clients are around the country. You know, most of my clients are like in LA or New York. And
get out of here!
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I have I have a select few Tampa clients, let's say, you know, people that, you know, are really doing this thing and doing it right, you know.
So Push Supreme is one of those.
Push Supreme is a hard worker, man. Yeah. He's like the hardest worker in the scene. He's always doing something, you know.
I agree. He's always either performing live or writing music or, you know, recording something or doing a charitable event, you know.
Yeah.
I admire the guy so much. He's been on the podcast, I think, more than any other guest that I've ever had on the podcast.
And he deserves it. Yeah. I've seen his episodes. He comes in with the mask and everything, you know. So you're going to have to do an unveiling episode with him at some point.
I asked him, like, are you ever going to take your mask off? And he's like, never. Yeah. So I told him, if you ever do decide, I would like for you to do it on the podcast.
Right. Get the exclusive. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally.
The exclusive. We're going to unmask Mr. Push Supreme here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So like, what are kind of some of the things that you work on? I know you said contracts and things, but like copyright wise, like what do you do?
Yeah, so I mean it's honestly mostly contracts, you know, and it's mostly, you know, like the biggest, you know, one of the most common contracts I do are producer agreements. So producers are the ones that get screwed over the first, you know, like they're the people forget about the producers, they forget to pay them, they forget to credit them, you know. So I work with a lot of producers in the area outside the area too, but I work with a lot of producers in general to make sure that they're getting
their fair share.
Yeah, their fair share, and they're, you know, that they're getting credited correctly, that they're getting paid properly, that they're getting, you know, some back end royalties, you know, they're getting paid by all the, you know, the proper performing rights organizations, by Sound Exchange, by the other, you know, by the MLC, you know, make sure that they're getting their money, you know? So I do, like, I probably do a couple producer deals a day, you know. Wow, it's like, yeah, nice. Like it's pretty common, and it's something every producer needs. So, I mean, if you're out there and you're making records and you're making beats, you know, get a deal, you know, get something on paper with your artist, even if it's a friend of yours or somebody, you know, you want that record. So in case the song blows up, you're getting your money.
Yeah. You
know,
get your cut.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to just give away beats for $200 and then that's it. And then the song explodes and it's,
yeah. I was just going to ask you, like, a lot of the producers that I know that have come on the show, they just sell their beats.
Yeah.
So is that what you're talking about? Like, don't sell your beat, like, stay attached to it somehow.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Instead of selling your beat, license your beat, you know, so give them, you know, it could be an exclusive license. So nobody else has the beat, but, you know, you still want to maintain some kind of ownership over the song and the publishing, at least, you know, cause that's where the real money kicks in, and that can be your livelihood. You know, 10 years from now, you could still be making some money off of a track, you know?
Yeah. They made 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So instead of just selling it once and then, that's it. Okay. Good luck with the song. You know, see you later. Like, be more involved, you know, get a percentage, get something, you know, going, especially if they're going to release it with a label or major labels, particularly, you know.
Do you suggest them doing that with every beat, even if it's like a small artist that's like no name?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just takes, you know, either hiring a lawyer or even if you make your own. You know, if you write down on a napkin, I have 10% of this song or whatever, like
get
that's
them to sign that.
Yeah. Like that's better than nothing, you know? But yeah, I definitely recommend that for every song, you know, basically any time that you're working with somebody else in the music industry, you should have some kind of agreement. So, you know, if you have a manager, you should have an agreement with your manager. If you have a feature on a song, you should have an agreement with the primary artist. You know, if you, you know, have a distribution deal, have a deal with your distributor, you know, and like, It sounds simple, but you'd be surprised how quickly people forget to, you know, get those deals in place.
Yeah, and the artist is not really thinking about that. They're just thinking about, you know, making their song go platinum or whatever.
Exactly. But then when your song goes platinum, then what are you going to do? You know, like, and then the worst thing that can happen, you know, to an artist is you have a song, it blows up, and then because you didn't have a deal with the producer or the featured artist or whoever you needed to deal with, then the song gets taken down, you know, because they have a copyright claim because you're using their intellectual property in your song. If you didn't make a contract about that,
you're lost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like that song could be gone and be taken off the internet, you know, tomorrow, you know,
and then there goes your work.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. And that's something, unfortunately, I have to do, you know, a fair amount of is send takedown notices, you know, to.
Oh, you do that too?
Yeah. To distribute. Yeah. For, you know, if you're, like I said, if you're using somebody's intellectual property and you don't have the right to that, you know, that's something people hire me for, is to go and talk to the distributor and say, hey, you know, they're using this beat
and be the muscle,
and then they don't have the right to the beat. So sorry, we gotta take this down, or else we're going to, you know, pursue further legal action, and you don't want that.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
So usually people, once you get a copyright claim, I mean, most reputable companies are like, it's not that they get scared, it's that it's true. It's like, you can't just use somebody's music or use somebody's, you know, lyrics or use somebody's art without compensation. So if you didn't properly make a deal, if you didn't compensate them correctly, you know, then they have just as much of a right to that song as you do.
You know? Have you ever had somebody come back and say, hey, you know, I know we use them, let's see if we can license this now?
Yeah. Sometimes after the fact, people want to come to the table and make a deal. And I mean, that's the best thing you can do at that point, you know, but
that kind of gives you a little bit more leverage on negotiations.
It does.
Cause like you caught them.
Red-handed almost. Yeah, no, it's definitely better to figure it out beforehand. You know, that goes with everything with music contracts, you know. Another deal that I do a lot of is like band partnership agreements. You know, if you're in a band, you know, that's kind of like forming a company.
It is,
you know, and a lot of times you're literally forming a company with your band. So you need some kind of agreement with your band members that says, hey, if we break up, this person keeps the band name, you know, who owns the songs, who owns the rights to the songs, who, you know, if you buy equipment together as a band, who owns the equipment when the band breaks up, you know?
Dude, that's stuff like, you don't even think about.
But every single band needs a band agreement, like 100%.
Agree.
You know, like if you're listening to this and you are in a band and you don't have some kind of agreement with the rest of your bandmates, you absolutely need that. Right now.
Yeah, you're leaving yourself open for, you know, somebody taking advantage of you and your work and your talent.
Yeah, and just messiness, because it's a lot easier to figure these things out when you're friends with everybody and you're all cool than, you know, 6 months after breaking up and you all hate each other and you don't want to talk about this stuff, and then
you're threatening to sue each other.
Yeah, exactly. And then one person wants to use a song that you wrote together as a band. You know, some person wants to release it with their solo project or whatever. Do they have the right to do that? Can they do that? That's what you got.
If it's not written down,
that's what you got to figure out. Yeah. You know, yeah, people don't think about that stuff, but you know, band agreements are where it's at. You know. Wow. Every band I talk to, I'm like, do you have a band agreement? And they're like, what's a band? What's a band agreement? It's like, you come on, you need this, you know?
So, wow, dude, the music industry is just wild.
It is.
It's like people trying to take advantage of other people that, like, people that have talent and people that don't have talent. It's right. Like this clash of, like, I want some of that, but, you know, at the expense of what? You know,
right.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. It's, you're right. It's a lot of people without talent exploiting people with talent, you know, and the people with talent just want to keep creating, you know, they don't want to have to deal with all this other stuff like that. There's this, you know, like fundamental dichotomy between, you know, the business brain and the art brain. You know, the art wants to make art, but the business side needs the money to keep it going, you know? Yeah. So, I like to think I'm somewhere in the middle.
In between.
Yeah.
You're like the mediator.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Sometimes I'm literally the mediator, you know? Wow. So, it's about finding ways that you can protect your art and your content, but also, you know, make some money off of it, hopefully. You know, yeah. I mean, nobody wants to
artists got to eat.
Yeah, artists got to eat. Nobody's doing this for free, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people are doing it for free, but nobody wants to do this for free.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, especially an artist that has spent years, maybe decades, you know, honing a craft, working on this stuff. Like, it's a full-time job. Like, people think just because it's fun, it's not work.
No,
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And you spend a lot of time, you know, working on these projects. So to just, like, you know, put it out in the world without any safeguards in place is crazy to me.
Just a free-for-all. Yeah. Like, here, take this.
You know? It's nuts.
That's wild. Oh, well, I want to get your opinion because I've never had a lawyer, on, a music lawyer on the podcast. What did you think of what happened to Taylor Swift with her album that she had to re-record because she didn't have the rights to, like?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. You know, she made a deal when she was pretty young that obviously didn't work out in her favor, you know, but she's a genius.
She's amazing.
Yeah, to re-record all the songs like that. I mean, you got to be a very... You have to have a very strong fan base to be able to pull that off, first off. And she's one of the few artists, maybe the only artist, that has that fan base that she can do that.
The Swifties.
You know, and I've liked her, you know, the Taylor's versions, I think, have been better than the originals, you know.
It's really? Like, yeah. Oh, I haven't listened to the new ones yet.
No, they're good. And the 1989 one is coming out soon, and that's my favorite Taylor Swift record. So, nice. You know, I'm excited for that.
It's almost like a remix, like remix albums that are coming out
now. Yeah, well, and she's just gotten so much better, you know. I mean, as an artist over the years, and her voice is a lot stronger, and, you know, it's just the re-recordings are fantastic, but... Yeah, being able to pull that off is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's wild. And the whole, I think even before then, with the whole Spotify thing, where she wouldn't even put her stuff on Spotify because it was so unfair to the artist.
Yeah,
like she changed that industry.
Sort of. You know, like it's still definitely, you know, can be unfair to the artist, but you know, she definitely, yeah, she's doing her thing. Apparently, Taylor Swift is a great boss to have because she, you know, she paid a. She gave a bunch of bonuses to everybody on her road crew and her live show, and, you know, good for T-Swift.
She was on an interview, I think, with Larry King. I don't remember who it was, but she was on an interview, and the guy made a comment about how backup singers didn't normally get, you know, health insurance. And she looks at him, she's so confused, and she's like, well, mine do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, why?
That's great.
Yeah. She just looks at the industry and says, you know, why are we doing this way?
Right.
And... Why, you know, if there's no reason, then why not change it? You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and she's one of the few artists that can do that, that can, you know, make that change. So I hope she does.
No, she definitely has the power to do that.
Yeah. Oh, she's all powerful, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, she even changed Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
The whole Ticketmaster fiasco, that changed Ticketmaster's rules and laws and things to protect the customer. And
yeah.
Yeah, she's making big waves.
She is. And now she's dating Travis Kelce, apparently.
So. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Oh, so, no, you know, she's going to change football, probably.
Wow.
You know, she'll you know, affect
everything she touches.
Everything she touches, you know. So that's actually one interesting thing is they asked her to do the Super Bowl, I think, last year or maybe the year before. And she said that she wanted to wait until she's done releasing the Taylor's versions to perform at the Super Bowl, which I think is really smart because you get such a massive boost in sales from doing the Super Bowl that it's like she wants to make sure she gets all that money, you know?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. And her movie that's getting ready to be released.
Yeah.
She was, I think there was an issue because she wanted to release it on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
But there was obviously in Hollywood, like that's the date that like horror movies usually come out. And stuff especially if it's in October.
I think it's the Exorcist movie. They changed the release date of the Exorcist.
Yeah.
Because of Taylor Swift. Yeah. Good for her. You know, I could talk about T-Swift all day.
Oh my God.
We could do a Taylor Swift podcast, you know, just about her, you know.
Yeah. What do you think about the writer strike?
I was actually just in LA, a couple months ago and, saw the picket lines, you know, and I have a lot of friends who are writers or work in writers' rooms who are affected by the strike. And, I think it's a bummer, you know, I think it's going to really affect the quality of television for a little while,
I remember with the last time there was a writer strike that there was a lot of shows that decided to continue without the writers and their quality just suffered.
Oh,
and
totally.
They had to cancel all these shows because the quality was so low. And I really hope that doesn't happen this time, but it seems like it's going to.
Yeah. Yeah. But I definitely think like, you know, writers should get paid more, you know, I think they should get better, you know, revenue from streaming. You know, I don't know the super particulars about the issues, but it seems like writers are getting screwed. You know, it seems like actors are getting screwed. Even, you know, all the money's going to the Netflixes and the studios, and you know, not a lot of that money's trickling down. So I get it. I get why they're upset. You know, we have a lot of the same issues in music. It's just we don't have.
Yeah, I was just gonna say there's a lot of parallels.
There are. There's just music doesn't have a union. You know, there's no like.
Really?
You know, yeah, and that's kind of going back to what we were talking about. How there's. You know, a lot of people taking advantage of other people in the music industry is because there's no real like governing body.
Yeah.
You know, there's no like rules really. Like music's the Wild West, you know. Wow. It's like you can sort of do whatever you can negotiate, and a lot of people have very unfair advantages in negotiations. So,
wow.
You know.
How would you unionize though? Like
I don't know. See,
that's the
problem. It's tough, you know, but
that's crazy, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But something needs to be done because, I mean, musicians, even just getting paid for live gigs, you know, is tough these days, you know? So it's,
The venues usually keep the majority of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like venues are doing a lot of, you know, merch cuts now where they'll take, I mean, not now. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, but they'll take a percentage of the merch that you sell, you know, even though they have no, they have no, you know, stake in your merch you
at all.
I mean? Yeah. Like you made these t-shirts, you made these hats, you made these, you know, things. And then now the, you know, just because you're performing at the venue, they're going to take 20% of whatever you sell on their property. It's like, come on.
Wow. You know, just because you're doing it on their property.
Yeah. Just cause they're, you're in their venue, you know, and sometimes, you know, like they'll in, you know, the venue will, have a merch person for you. So somebody to sell the merchandise for you, that, that makes sense. You know, if they're going to get a cut, you know, to pay that person or those people, that, that makes sense.
But those people, you know, don't get paid the full percentage.
Oh, I'm sure they get
paid an hourly fee.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but it's like a lot of times artists are still selling the merch on their own. You know, like the artist is at the table selling the merch, or their crew is at the table selling the merch. Like, why does the venue need a fee?
Yeah, you know? That.
So, you know, that, but that's one thing you can negotiate. A lot of artists don't know that, but, you know, if you have some leverage, you can negotiate down your merch cut, you know.
Wow.
Either get it down to a lower percentage or get it taken off altogether, you know. And then there's some great venues out there, especially some of the smaller ones, you know, rooms like Crowbar or something like that, where they, you know, they're not taking a venue fee, you know, they're more actively supporting the artist, you know. So there's still some good rooms out there. There's still some good places. Wow. You know,
well, what would you say is the one thing that artists don't know that they should know?
You know, a lot of artists don't know that they need to register with a performing rights organization and register their songs. You know, I guess it's officially publishing your songs, you know. So there's three performing rights organizations in the U.S. There's ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. You know, you can register with one of them, and whenever you release a song or whenever you write a song, you can put those songs on their platform and they will collect royalties for you. You know, whenever that song's played on the radio or, you know, in a, whenever it's in a movie or something like that, you know, any of your performance royalties, and they will send you a check every quarter for the royalties that you're owed. And a lot of artists don't know to do that. They think that they're just getting money from their distributor and that's it. You know, no, like there's a whole other side of this where you can be getting royalties and, you know, you're probably leaving money on the table if you haven't done that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of artists that probably don't even know that.
Oh, tons of artists, and a lot of like big artists. Like sometimes I'll look up stuff and be like, "How is this not registered?" You know, like Lil Durk songs or something. You know, and it's like this is like a massive artist with millions of streams, and you're leaving so much money on the table by not, you know, collecting those performance rights royalties. You know, so absolutely sign up with a they're called PROs. Sign up with a PRO with a pro. You know, and get those.
Doesn't matter which one.
It doesn't really matter which one.
They all pretty much do the same thing.
Yeah, they all do the same thing. I know CSAC is like invite only. They're a little more exclusive.
Gotcha.
BMI, I think, is free to sign up. And then ASCAP has some sort of sign up fee. It's been a while, though, since I've signed up on there, you know. But yeah, it doesn't really matter which one. I mean, they're all good. I would recommend if you can, you know, maybe reach out to the different companies, maybe try to get like a rep or somebody, you know, at one of the PROs, and then go with that one, go with whoever responds, you know? Yeah. So
if an artist has no budget, they don't have a manager, they don't have anything, can they still do that?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you should literally, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't have a PRO, like sign up today, you know, go to the BMI website and sign up right now.
Damn.
You know?
Yeah. That's good advice, man.
Yeah. 100%. It's definitely awesome. You know, and there's a lot that they can do for you too. Like if you, you know, if you're a producer, for example, and you have, you know, 20% of a really big song, you can actually get an advance through your performing rights organization, you know? So let's say your song is going to make, you know, I don't know, $10,000 over the course of, you know, 2 years, you can get that money advanced to you, and then, you know, you have money in your pocket, you know, instead of waiting for those royalties to come in, you know. And a lot of people don't realize that you can get, and you know, people think that you only get an advance from your record label or your publishing company, but no, you can get an advance from your performing rights organization. And a lot of artists do that and get money up front, and it's a lot better than waiting every quarter for your check to come in, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and then they kind of collect it until
they collect it until it recoups, and then you're back to you know, square one. But
gotcha.
But yeah, that can be a good way if you need some cash to finish a record, or you want to buy some equipment, or you need to go on tour or something. Like, talk to your performing rights organization, try to advance those royalties if you're getting, you know, enough money to warrant it.
Yeah.
So first you gotta get on a big song. That's
yeah,
the key.
Yeah.
You know,
they gotta see the potential.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Give,
you know, advances to just everyone.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't want to take an advance, you know, because you have to pay that advance back, and you know,
like if it doesn't reach the limit, you have to pay
yeah,
it back.
Yeah, and sometimes that can tie up your earnings and tie up your music because you're yeah, you know,
put your tour on hold.
Right, because you're not making that money back. So, wow. But if you know, you know, and that's kind of one of the good things about streaming is that once you hit a certain level, like your streaming income is pretty consistent. You know, like if you have 2 million monthly listeners, which is a lot, you know, if you have 2 million monthly listeners, and that stays consistent, you can start to estimate like, okay, I'm going to make X amount of money every single month, you know? And then that's when you can start approaching companies and being like, hey, I'm making,
look at my numbers,
you know? Yeah. Look at my numbers. I'm making this much every month. Like, you know, can you guys advance me, you know, 2 years worth? And then, you know, you get a nice chunk of change in your pocket and you can do whatever you want with that. But you know that you're going to have that consistent income coming back, you know, that can make that money back for you, you know? Wow. So,
dude, that's awesome.
So it's crazy, man. The music industry is, it's its own beast.
It is the Wild West, man. Yeah. Like you said earlier, it's like, it's all this crazy stuff that's out there. And
yeah,
if they don't have somebody like you to kind of guide them along, or a manager or somebody that knows the industry, it's kind of like,
yeah,
like you said, artists create, and that's all they want to do.
Right.
So it's like, they don't even, I don't care. I'm just going to put my song out there and they get screwed.
Yeah. They get screwed. Yeah. Like I say, the only thing worse than not making a deal or not having an agreement is having a bad agreement, you know? So it's like, you definitely need somebody to look that over and make sure that you're getting what's fair, you know? And what's fair is a constantly changing target, you know? So it's like, you got to stay on top of these things and know what's going on and what, you know, what the rest of the industry is doing so that you can kind of have some benchmarks there, you know?
Dude, so other than producers and artists, is there any other kind of like insane contract that
there's a lot of insane contracts, yeah, especially with labels these days, you know? Labels are, I'm not going to say that they're not important, because they serve, you know, certain types of artists, and they definitely, like, a good label is worth its weight in gold. But, you know, a lot of times, like, artists are signing these deals with indie labels who, you know, like, aren't really doing a whole lot for them, but they're still going to take 50% of their royalties or 40% of their royalties. And it's like,
what am I getting for that?
Yeah. For that, you could just sign a deal with a distributor, and, you know, a distributor usually takes like 10 to 15% of royalties, and they might do the same job, you know?
So what's the difference between a label and a distributor?
So a distributor is getting your music from point A to point B. So you upload the music to them and they're putting it out on Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal and all those places. And they're just, yeah, they're distributing it. Whereas a label will distribute it or work with a distributor to distribute it, but they'll also, you know, promote it. They'll also take on more upfront money, you know, like they'll pay for, you know, if you're pressing records or making CDs, they'll pay for that. You know, they'll pay for the marketing. They'll
kind of put up some money,
yes,
up front,
yeah,
to get you up and running.
Right.
And then do they take a bigger cut then?
Typically, yeah, a label will take a bigger cut. But that's why, you know, if you're signing a deal where it's like, okay, I'm giving up 50% of my royalties to this label and all they're doing is putting it on Spotify, you don't really need
that's
that.
Not worth it.
You know, unless like that label has good connections or, you know, a strong marketing department or a way to help you reach a larger audience. Just do it yourself, you know, build your own audience. And that's the thing that artists need to realize too, is like, you don't really, you know, you need somebody to look over the contracts. You need somebody to help guide you. You need somebody to help with strategy. But in terms of like building a fan base, that's your job. Nobody's going to do that for you.
Yeah.
You know, even labels these days, like, they don't want to develop artists. They don't want to build your fan base. Like, they want an artist that already has an established fan base that they can take and put it on a bigger platform. You know, they don't want to be in the trenches with you, yeah, you know.
Just want the easy stuff.
Exactly. They want somebody, you know, once you already got a TikTok viral hit, then talk to labels. Then, you know, yeah. It's like, but you got to make that hit happen on your own. You know, nobody's going to do that for you.
Like you said, you have to come to them with your numbers. Like, yeah, this is how many numbers I got.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And it's easier than ever to build those numbers, but also harder than ever. You know, it's like, it's tough.
I think the internet made it easy for everyone to do that, but because it's so easy, everyone's doing it.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's what's going on. Yeah.
How does an artist differentiate themselves on a, you know, a landscape so crowded?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I think just find ways to show your personality, you know, who you are behind the music. You know, people love BTS stuff. They love behind the scenes stuff.
They love podcasts.
They like to hear, you know, at least I do. You know, I'm a big music nerd, though, so maybe I'm biased. But, yeah. You know, I love to hear the process behind, you know, how you came up with these songs, how they came together, you know, who you worked with. You know, that kind of thing is interesting to me, you know. And I think, you know, fans are looking to connect with somebody more so than just to listen to their songs. Like, they want, you know, they want
to know who you are.
They want to know who you are. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reason why I started the podcast is to get the artist in here, but it's also to, you know, humanize them. Cause sometimes you'll just see their Instagram and it's like, you know, they live in this lavish lifestyle. It's just a regular person, bro.
Yeah.
So when they come in here, they tell, you know, they tell their story, where they came from, how their music process, that kind of stuff. It humanizes these people. And I think that's, people can connect on a more personal level with the artist.
And that's how you make real fans, you know. And that's why I think the live show is still so important, because, you know, you can make that connection just being on stage and then being in the audience, you know, especially when you're playing at rooms like Crowbar, you know, where the audience is right there. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that's a great way to build a fan base is, you know, direct connections, however you can do that.
Yeah.
You know,
and
networking and meeting your fans. And, you know, this is something, you know, back to Pusha Preem, this is something Pusha Preem's great at. He's great at connecting with everybody that goes to his shows and talking to his audience and taking pictures with everybody. And, you know, that takes
a special kind of person to
do that. Yeah, absolutely. It does.
A lot of artists are very introverted. They're not that kind of social, you know.
Yeah.
They're not in the social scene. So it's like, let me just write my music and I'll go up there and perform and then I'm done. But it's like,
yeah, but you have to have that other element of, you know, I'm here to, you know, make friends with my fans, really, you know, like I'm here, you know, you're trying to build these long-term connections with your audience. And, you know, you might only get one chance to do that. Maybe they're only at one show ever.
Yeah.
You know,
cause you're in their town. They're not going to travel.
Yeah, exactly. I've had the opposite happen too, where like sometimes, you know, you meet a band and you really like the band or the artist, and then they're like total assholes.
Complete douchebags. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no,
I don't let anybody in the green room.
Yeah. Yeah. They always say that, you know, don't work with your heroes or don't meet your heroes. Yeah, sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's true.
Yeah, but, it's true. But that's why I appreciate people like Pusha Preem, that they do, you know, they break that barrier.
Yeah.
It's like they do things differently for a reason.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about your music career, man. I know you kind of dabbled a little bit in music.
Yeah.
Did you ever release anything?
Yeah, there's one album on Spotify from a band that I was in. The band was called, it's the worst band name of all time. It was called The Cruise. Okay. And that's a terrible band name because there's so many different ways to spell Cruise, you know? So I would always say it was spelled like Penelope, not like Tom. So it was Cruz, C-R-U-Z, like the Spanish last name.
Gotcha. Like a cross.
Yeah.
Cruz.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we released one album. It's fine. I sing and I play bass on it. And, you know, I'm definitely proud of the record, but it's funny that you mention it because I actually looked it up on Spotify the other day and we had 0 monthly listeners.
Oh, nice.
And I've never seen that before. I've never seen 0, you know? So it's like, you know, I've seen artists with like, you know, 5 monthly listeners or 10 or something really, really small, but we had 0. And I was like, you know, I mean, we haven't promoted the record or talked about it in like 20 years, so, you know, or like 15 years. So it makes sense that it has 0 monthly listeners, but it was just funny to see that, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Spotify will even like suggest an artist with 0
monthly views. I don't think they will. I think it's just buried there. But the thing is, you know, so much music gets released every day that like there's probably a lot out there that is at 0 or, you know. But you'd think at least somebody's listening to themselves, you know, but it's for
at least one,
you know, at least one person is listening to themselves.
One monthly listener.
Yeah. But no, the cruise, zero monthly listeners, and I'm proud of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, now you're going to be the one. Yeah, now all these people are going to listen to it, and it's like, you know. But yeah, I had a lot of fun. I still play bass, like, you know, on occasion, just like in my room. I would love to play more, but I just don't have time anymore. And I feel like my talents are better served behind the scenes and working with artists. You know, I don't need to be in the studio, you know, cutting tracks.
No, you're still in the industry, man. Yeah. You're still around the artists. You're still around the music. So,
yeah. And it's better than this way. You know, like this is, I ended up in exactly the position that I needed to end up for, you know, what I like to do, my skill set. And, you know, I just want to support other artists. You know, I'm like, even, you know, like in Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, like I'm always a support character, you know, like I like to be, you know, helping out behind the scenes. I don't want to be the
Scottie Pippen to the
Michael Jordan. Exactly. I'd much rather be Michael Jordan than Scottie Pippen, but you know, you need the Scottie Pippens, you know, and you need those support characters, and you need, you know, people to help out behind the scenes. And I love doing that. I just want to be, you know, I want to be able to help artists keep making art, you know, because I enjoy the art that they make and I want them to keep making it. You know, it's as simple as that.
So. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. What is your thought then on AI?
Oh God, AI scares me, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially like, it's like, you know, we create artificial intelligence. You'd think that they would use it to like fix the mundane stuff that we have to do, you know, like, you know, you know, TPS reports or whatever at your job. Like you think the AI could do that, but instead we're using AI to like make fake art. Like what, you know, really that's the best use of artificial intelligence, is to do the thing that everybody wants to be able to do. Like, I don't know. It just, I think we're misusing it. You know,
I think it's mostly just like a proof of concept though. I think we're in the very infancy of AI.
Oh, absolutely. So
I think people are just, hey, look what this can do. Hey, look what this can do.
Yeah.
And I think it's we're in the Wild West right now of AI, and I just want to get your opinion. If an AI creates music, let's stick to music.
Yeah,
who owns the copyright for that, or who should own the copyright?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Is it the person that ran the program or ran the art through the AI? Is it the person that created the program? Is it
that's the argument.
You know, is it the original, you know, the art that kind of got taken by the AI, that it's pulling from? Like, that's tough, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I'm definitely interested in learning more about though, you know, but AI can be dangerous for lawyers too. Like there was a lawyer who, I think he, wrote like a brief for, you know, a court case or whatever. And it like cited a bunch of fake cases and like had a bunch of incorrect law in it. So, you know,
and he actually presented it.
He presented it in court. Yeah. And it's like, that's not,
and the judge is like, no,
no. Yeah. That's not good. You know? So, I've been trying to find ways to incorporate AI into my practice though. Like, I think it's really cool. And, you know, for like, you know, putting together like boilerplate language in an agreement, you know, like, I think it could be pretty cool to use it for that.
Use it as a tool.
But yeah, for making art, or, you know, I've seen AI plugins that producers are using where they run it through the AI and it's like, you know, take this song, but remove all the sounds except for the trumpet. Mm-hmm. And then it'll just do that. Yeah, you know,
so like that as a tool.
Yeah. Like that's amazing to me. And that I think is very valuable. But when the AI is making the art on its own, or it's, you know, making a fake Drake verse or something like that, it's like, I just think that we're wasting the potential. You know?
It's plagiarism basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're pulling from, I think it's, there is still a gray line, a gray area in this, because I think the AI is only as good as what you feed it. Right. So when you're feeding it all this information, where's all that information coming from? It's like all the existing work from people.
Yeah.
So then whenever you create something from that, it's just an amalgamation of that. So it's only as good as that.
Right.
So it's only going to spit out something that it came up with from that data set.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's interesting because humans do the same thing. Like we're pretty much at the mercy of our lived experiences, our the things that we've absorbed, all the conversations that we've had throughout our lives. It just took us, you know, for me, 40 years to get to this point. Whereas AI can do it in seconds. So it's like you can make the argument that it is creating something, but it is like, I don't know. There's still that gray area.
Yeah. And I don't know what the answers are. Like, I'm sure, you know, if I was in law school now, that'd be the kind of thing I would research and do, you know, do a project on or something. But
yeah, that's what I was curious on your opinion, because I know it is starting to create art that people are trying to copyright. And their argument is, you know, it's learning just like I learned. And it's creating. And it's not like I'm having it create and then copyright that. I'm having it help me create something.
Yeah.
And I'm editing it. I'm making it my own. How much needs to change before it is my own?
Yeah. And that's the question. Created. Yeah. You know, but that's the interesting thing about kind of music law in general, is that, you know, it's the same way with, like, you know, if you know, Bruno Mars stole your song or whatever, like how much needs to change? Like, there's only so many notes on the piano, you know, like how much needs to change for it to be a new work, you know, or how much is out, you know, when is it still derivative? Like, I don't
Agreed. Know. You know? Yeah. What is it? Ed Sheeran just recently got sued because some old record label thought that he was stealing something just because it had like three or four notes in the chorus, and he won the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because were you following that?
I was following a little bit, but yeah, it's so subjective over, it you know, is. Like where's the line?
Where's the line?
You know, you kind of got to take it at a case by case basis. So, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. With art, again, it's so subjective that it's like, you know, there's a lot of gray areas everywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of gray areas.
I hope that the copyright system, you know, eventually gets to the point where they can define, you know, this so that there is no gray area, but I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
If they did, then we wouldn't need lawyers.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, so I'd be out of a job, you know. But it's all about what you can argue and, you know.
Yeah. What you can prove.
What you can prove, yeah. So it's tough.
So what's next for you, man?
What's next for me? That's a great question. Just working, you know, working more and more, you know, trying to get my name out there. Like, I still think, you know, there's a lot of people that don't know what I do and, you know, need my help. So,
I saw some big artists following you on Instagram.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, and I'm working with some really cool artists and, you know, doing some pretty major deals and, getting a lot of artists into like the licensing game. So like I can't really say too much about it, but I have a client whose song is getting licensed in an Amazon TV show. It's going to be like the theme song of the show.
Nice. Okay.
And A, that pays really, really well. And B, that's a great way to get your song out there, you know, because it's like the
Spotify
theme song
numbers are going to shoot up.
Absolutely. So, you know, as soon as I started talking with the Amazon people and I saw the number that they were throwing at them, I was like, all right, Amazon, you know, you're doing it all right. Cause you know, some of the other, like, Netflix is kind of notoriously cheap. No, no offense, Netflix. If you know, if any of your people, please keep hiring my music or hiring my clients. Don't blackball me, Netflix. But Netflix, like, you know, kind of lowballs a lot of the music licensing stuff. But like Amazon was like, hey, we have all this money, here you go. You know, and granted, it's for a theme song in a show. So you'd think it would be more than, you know, something playing in the background of a TV
or
show
in the credits or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if it's a theme song.
Yes.
You know, it's going to get plays.
Right. So.
Wow.
So, yeah, I wish I could say more about that, but it's still like we're still working out the details. So I can't say like the show that it's going to be, but it's something I'm looking forward to. Like, it's a show that I was planning to watch already. So.
And now even more.
Now I'm definitely going to be watching it. You know? Wow. So.
So in your experience, which one's the worst platform?
In terms of paying money,
because I heard the Apple TV Plus, the new streaming service. I heard that one's just like Amazon; they're just throwing money at people.
They are. So yeah, I would say it's probably Netflix or maybe Hulu. You know, are kind of on the lower end.
Yeah, Hulu's a little bit on the lower end too.
But you know, it also depends on what show you're on or what movie you're on. Like, you know, different things have bigger budgets, but. You'd be surprised, like, music licensing is like the last thing that some of these companies think about. Like, they,
you know, afterthought.
It is like they do, you know, they make the whole show and then they're like, oh crap, we need music. And then, you know, they ask the artist, you know, they're like, get, you know, we need an answer in 24 hours if we can use your music. It's like, come on.
Oh,
you
know,
like they're like, you know, this TV show is going to air next week. Like we need it now. You know,
it's already on the pilot.
Yeah. Like yeah. And that's why a great tip for artists is if you want to get into music licensing and you want people to sync your music, you need instrumental versions of all your songs. So you can't, you know, because a lot of times, like, they want to use the background music, but they don't want to use, you know,
the full lyrics,
or that's too distracting, especially, like, with commercials, you know, like, they don't want the voiceover talking about GMC cars to get drowned out by your rapping, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, every time you're in the studio and you finish a song, have the engineer bounce out a completely instrumental version, you know?
I noticed that too with TV shows and movies. They'll usually, for the intro of the content, they'll play the instrumental, but then at the end in the credits, they'll play the full version with the lyrics and
stuff. Yeah. So you want to have that ready, because like I said, you know, you might only get a day to respond. And if you don't have your instrumentals ready, they're going to move on to somebody who does, you know. So I always say prepare that from the very beginning. Don't get an opportunity and then have to go back to your engineer and say, hey, can you bounce this out for me? And
in 24
like,
hours.
Yeah, in 24 hours. And he's like, I don't even know where I save the file. And, you know, it's whatever. It's like, just get it while you're in the session. Get those instrumentals bounced. You know, it's super important.
Yeah, make that part of your process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so easy to do, too. Just turn off the voice tracks and balance it a little bit better. And
And, you know, if you have time, do multiple versions. Do a version that just has the chorus, you know, do a version that get an a cappella version bounce, you know, like whatever, you know, give them options, you know, because you never know what people are going to want to use.
That's true. Yeah.
And licensing is one of the more lucrative avenues in music right now, you know,
big time
is selling. You know, I always say that people aren't buying music anymore, but companies are buying music. So make it easy for a company to buy your music. And, you know, they're not always going to want all of your lyrics and all of your verses. Sometimes they just want the music.
Yeah.
You
know?
Sometimes they just want the vibe.
I admire George Lucas so much because he retained the rights to Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that was such a brilliant move. People made fun of him. Like, back then in the 70s, that wasn't a thing. You know, you made a movie and you gave it to the distributors or these companies. But he retained the rights to not only the characters that he created, but also the IP, the entire IP. Yeah. And he was able to sell it.
Yeah, to Disney for billions. $4 billion. Yeah. So that's the dream. You know?
Retain your rights, guys. Retain your rights.
Absolutely.
Producers, license your music. Don't sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as you can retain, the better, you know. Don't give up your publishing. Don't, you know.
Yeah, because you never know what's going to come in the future. Like, exactly. That could be, you know, now we have streaming services. In the future, it could be something else, you know, a different platform that's completely different. And because you didn't cover all your bases, you're kind of screwed at that point.
Yeah. And one thing that's really popular, too, and that people, you know, publishing companies especially love is, like, new versions of existing songs. You know, like, people always say, like, oh, there's no creativity in the music business because they're sampling, you know, all this stuff and they're just rehashing old songs. But that's great for the songwriter that wrote that old song.
Yeah,
you know, on our podcast,
renewed royalties.
Yeah we had on our podcast Cigar City Radio, we had Fastball. When we were in Austin, Texas, we interviewed Fastball, and you know, they have that song, you know, Am I Out of My Head? Am I Out of My Mind? Or whatever.
Yeah.
And that song got used by, like, Machine Gun Kelly, like, or somebody like that. Then they were like, you know, they made so much more money because of that. You know, it's like they didn't have to do anything, but the song just exploded, you know, just had a resurgence in popularity because somebody else used it. So, you know, people are out there like, oh, you know, you're just stealing from other artists. But no, if you make a deal and you do it right and that artist, you know, owns a percentage of the song, like,
they're still going to get their cut.
Yeah. Like, that's what you want.
Their estate.
Yeah. That's what you want. You know,
it's funny because, Stranger Things, when the latest season came out, there was a song in there that it was from the 80s.
What was the Kate Bush song?
Yes.
Yes,
Kate Bush. And that song exploded on Spotify.
Yeah.
As soon as that aired. So it's like, she's obviously not alive, but her estate, her kids, her grandkids. I mean,
I think she's alive.
Is she really?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
She's probably getting some money.
she's getting money for it for sure. And that's a perfect example of like, yeah, you never know, you know,
you literally never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody a decade or two down the road can be like, hey, you know, let's use this. And
yeah,
there you are. You get,
yeah. And we don't, we, and like you said, we don't know how music and the industry is going to change. We don't know how technology is going to change. So, you know,
protect yourself.
Yeah. Keep your rights if you can.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's good advice.
Yeah.
So if somebody, you know, a starting artist wants to reach out and get your services, how can they get a hold of you?
A lot of ways. I'm on all the social media platforms at Real Randy Ojeda. I'm at Randy Ojeda Law. You know, you can email me, randy@randyojedalaw.com. You can go to my website, randyojedalaw.com. A lot of ways to reach out to me. I'm pretty accessible.
Esquire.
You know, yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Esquire. But yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, like, you know, hit me up on Instagram. Let me know you found me on the podcast too. I'll give you a discount.
Nice. Heck, you know? Yeah.
Just get that blue box discount. Yeah. You know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Totally.
Well, thanks again, dude. Thanks again for coming by. A lot of great information. Hopefully your new artists out there can, you know, protect yourselves, put some walls around you and just, you know, protect your art. You know, I'm an artist. Everybody that creates art should be protected if somebody wants to use your stuff. So thanks again, man.
100%. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is fun.
Yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah, thanks again. And for us, it's going to be at Blue Box Podcast on all the platforms. So if you want to check out some 60-second clips of the podcast, check us out there. Yeah, and then obviously on all the platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcast, all the platforms, we're everywhere. So search for Think Outside the Blue Box or at Blue Box Podcast. And that's going to do it for us. Thanks again, brother.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can do one next year and kind of catch up with
the
laws. And
let's keep it coming.
Let's do it. Awesome. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks. Peace.